Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stephen Neal, CEO of CharityChannel.com. So, you want your charity to succeed. You came to the right place. Integration of online and offline techniques is the key to your fundraising success, and practical advice on going green is what you need. With this show, The Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart, you will learn from experts around the world who provide advice you can use. Our host is Ted Hart, one of the foremost nonprofit thought leaders. His books range from successful online fundraising to use of social media and how to make your nonprofit green. His guests are leaders in their field who will share tips and trade secrets for nonprofit management, green strategy, and fundraising success. Ted lectures around the world, but now he's here for you. From the latest in charity news, technology, fundraising, and social networking, Ted and his guests help you maneuver through this economic downturn in the charitable sector to greater levels of efficiency and fundraising success. And now, here's Ted.
Hey, and good afternoon. It is 12 noon here on Monday, March 15th in Washington, D.C., and thank you for joining us here on Blog Talk Radio for the Nonprofit Coach, and this is Ted Hart. Thank you for joining us and all of you who are listening in to Blog Talk Radio. Remember, you can call in and ask a question of our page 2 expert, Mike Johnston, today. All you need to do is dial 1-347-324-3080. But before we get to Mike on page 2, page 1. Shout out to all of our friends out at South by Southwest. You can find that huge conference online at sxsw.com. And I have to say, Twitter is just a buzz. You got all the geeks down there in Texas, and they're saying they've got registration of 29,572. So quite a success down there at South by Southwest. Wish I was with you. But you folks have a good time. Also here on page one are the Social Innovation Awards 2010. Just a reminder to everybody that the philanthropy submissions only have 7 days left. You can find information at socialinnovationawards.com. Or don't forget, at p2pfundraising.org, that's the letter 2, the number, or I'm sorry, the letter P, the number 2, the letter P, and fundraising.org. Click on archives, and in our newsletter, we always have all the links from page 1 here, so you'll find the link for the Social Innovation Awards, and you've got 7 days to submit your submission for this year. So good luck to everybody who has their submissions in, and looking forward to seeing the Social Innovation Awards in the philanthropy category this year. We've got a little bit of controversy brewing here on page one, and I'm going to ask Mike Johnston to weigh in on his thoughts here. Here in the United States, senators are questioning the $1 million paycheck that is going to Boys and Girls Club of America executives. Big price tag there, and I think where it's gotten Senator Chuck Grassley's attention is that they are saying that they are lacking funding and they have to close some of their local Boys and Girls Club for lack of funding. Yeah, that seems like a pretty high paycheck. So where do you draw the line? What's proper compensation? How do you make those decisions in the nonprofit sector? But the compensation was nearly $1 million, and I'd like to hear what Mike has to say about that, so I'll be asking him. For all the geeks out there, again, here on page one, you know the iPad is going to be launched soon. That's going to be released on April 3rd. And some of the questions are, you know, is it worth pre-ordering an iPad? Well, I think it was over 50,000 orders in just the first 2 hours. But should you order your iPad now? Well, it looks like pretty good technology. But sent in from Kevin Courtney over on Facebook, he is saying this morning, and I can't say I disagree with him, that the third version of everything Apple makes is the best it will ever be. Wait till then or you're wasting your money. I think most of you know that I'm very interested in helping charities go green with my new book, Nonprofit Guide to Going Green, and we'll be talking about that in a future show here on the Nonprofit Coach. But how wasteful is this? If your battery goes dead, and according to Kevin here, he says they plan for the battery to go dead in less than 1 year. I don't know if that's planned or not. You actually have to send it in, and they'll send you another iPad, and you're responsible for backing up your own data. So some of the suggestions over on smartmoney.com about whether or not you should pre-order is not really right now. Wait for prices to drop, bugs to be worked out, more apps to be available. Connectivity can be a bit of an issue. And the competition for this iPad looks like it could be pretty steep, and you may see some other iPad-like devices that you might be more interested in. So I think, like a lot of new technology, this is exciting, but probably the jury's out on whether or not you need one right now. For the average charity, I would say worth the wait. Another item here on page one, the Chronicle of Philanthropy has a new survey out, and this is, I think, important for all charities who are looking at partnering with for-profit companies. Nicole Wallace is writing about attitudes towards charities in marketing partnerships, and overall very, very positive. More than half the people in the survey, 56%, said that such partnerships make them more likely to feel positively towards the nonprofit group. Half of the participants said that they were more likely to make a donation to a charity, and 41% reported that they're more likely to volunteer for an organization. So I know that our page two expert today, Mike Johnson, has a good deal of experience in these kinds of partnerships, so I'm sure he'll comment on that today. What else we got here on page two? Well, I've got an interesting video here from YouTube, and I'm going to give you an opportunity to hear from Jeremy Piven first, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the One campaign.
Everybody ready? Still rolling? Here we go. And action.
Hey, I'm Jeremy Piven. This month, One and YouTube are joining forces to spread the word about the progress that's being made in the fight against extreme poverty and preventable disease. And we need your help. Join me and One by going to youtube.com/video volunteers. Make a video about an organization making a difference in the fight against global poverty. Submit your video by March 26, and we will pick the top three to go up on the YouTube homepage and one.org at the end of the month. In January, I, like many of you, joined a chorus of voices from all over the world in standing up for the people of Haiti after an earthquake devastated their country. But what we sometimes forget is that extreme poverty exists every day in places all across the globe. It may seem overwhelming and it may seem hopeless, but here's the thing, it's not. 3 million people in Africa living with AIDS are now on life-saving medication for the first time. 42 million children around the globe are in school today who weren't just a few years ago. Malaria deaths have been cut in half in countries all across Africa, but the world isn't hearing about these successes. Progress is being made, and with the right kind of investments, we can accelerate it. We can save lives, fight hunger, we can put kids back in school, and get clean water to the people who need it most. That is why we need you to tell these stories. Let's come together as one, make our voices heard. Make a video. Send it in. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Jeremy. This is an important campaign, and whether you are a global development organization or you volunteer or care about a global development organization, don't miss this deadline of March 26th, putting together your own promotional video. What I really like about this, and those of you who have heard me lecture or know my work, is one of the things I really push is this notion of stewardship. As charitable organizations, we often are so good at pointing out the need, but we're not so good about telling the story of what good work has been done, how investments in these charities really do make a difference. One of the things I really point out, really appreciate about what Jeremy Piven pointed out in this particular audio clip, are the successes, you know, the money that has been donated already, that we are making progress. So I think this is significant. I think it's really important for all organizations. And for those global development organizations that will be chosen, three charities that will be chosen, they're going to be given front page on YouTube, and that's huge placement. So again, don't miss March 26th, and all these links, as you know, are in the newsletter at p2pfundraising.org. Just click on archives. All right, so what next? We've got a lot on page one today. The next is really very interesting for those of us who are in the social media business today. Big announcement coming from the United Nations today that they are listing and announcing today a social media envoy group. This is huge. This is really trying to harness the power of the Internet and so many messages of this sort for charitable organizations to really watch what's happening in this social media envoy group. Top social media folks from all over are guaranteeing and promising as a social media envoy that they will push topics out through their Twitter accounts and Facebook and other social media to help fight against malaria. And the goal here is that every child, every family that needs bed netting, which has been proven, just something as simple as bed netting, so inexpensive, can cut down on malaria and cut down on people having the problem of mosquitoes, and that nearly 400 million people have been covered by this just since 2007. So the United Nations is setting a goal of universal bed netting, and we've got some really fine folks. Check it out on the link that we have on p2pfundraising.org. But luminaries like Larry King and Arianna Huffington and Ryan Seacrest and many other names that you know, some names that maybe you don't know as well, Pete Cashmore over at Mashable, Oprah radio host Derek Ashong, really important stuff, really great group. I really applaud the United Nations for harnessing the power of social media in this way. I don't see his name on here, but I did see some postings from Anderson Cooper over on CNN on his page this morning. I see Jack Gray is the producer and writer for CNN, so that may be coming through through that posting as well. But really important work. What else have we got here on page one? A really fun fundraiser that you probably know today is the Ides of March. We've got a March Madness kicking off for basketball fans. But there's also an annual fundraiser that's done all over the world to help conquer kids' cancer. And I want to give you a chance to hear a little bit about that, and then I'll fill you in a little bit more.
How much is your hair worth to you? Is it worth a child's life? Each year, thousands of St. Baldrick's heroes shave their heads to raise funds for life-saving research. The St. Baldrick's Foundation needs you to join this worldwide effort. Together, we can conquer kids' cancer, the number one disease killer of children. Sign up for an event, make a donation, volunteer. Visit stbaldricks.org.
That's how much fun. Now, you know, I can't get very far with St. Baldrick's because there's not a whole lot of hair to cut here. But I'm on their website right now, stbaldricks.org, and of course you can find the link at p2pfundraising.org. Click on the archives. They've got 631 events already set up around the world. This is a global fundraising effort, over $10 million already raised. They've got on their website showing over 27,000, almost 28,000 people who have had their heads shaved, and I think their goal this year is 40,000. This is something that's done. St. Baldrick is Irish, and so it's done around this time of year. But the events actually go throughout the year. So go online, find one nearby, or host one yourself. But this is a great opportunity to help kids with cancer, and is my homage today to St. Patrick's Day, which is coming up here on Wednesday. It was, I think, a bit of a surprise to a lot of people, probably no more than a surprise to President Barack Obama when he was named this year's Nobel Peace Prize laureate. What comes along with that is a $1.4 million award. Very proud of our president here in the United States. He's decided to donate every penny of that to charity, and you can find over on whitehouse.gov or, again, on the link at p2pfundraising.org that he has announced who's actually going to get that money. The largest share of that is going to go to an organization called Fisher House. Fisher House is a national nonprofit organization that provides housing for families of patients receiving medical care at major military and VA medical centers. Number two goes to the Bush-Clinton Haiti Fund, and then on down through several different organizations. I think nice diversity here. Well done, Mr. President. Money going to the United Negro College Fund, to the Hispanic Scholarship Fund, American Indian College Fund, AfriCare, and the Central Asian Institute. So lots of organizations that are getting money, getting a piece of the $1.4 million. Proud of our president for not only winning the award, but for deciding to donate his prize money. What else have we got here on page one? Long page one here today. A little bit of controversy popped up this morning. I caught it on Twitter. Sharon Schneider actually posted this morning. She said, "I find it wrong-headed to bribe people into volunteering by offering them a ticket to Disney in their Give a Day, Get a Day promotion." Not sure that I necessarily agree here. Those of you who are already getting our newsletter saw that we posted on this in our newsletter, and something that we really promoted and tried to push for volunteerism. And happy to say, just announced today by Joanne Fritz over on nonprofitsabout.com, that Disney succeeded in recruiting 1 million volunteers with this campaign. And, of course, here on the Nonprofit Coach, we've got a little bit of an audio clip for you here.
I love to volunteer.
It's gotten us thinking a lot more about why we volunteer.
What makes you who you are is what you give, not what you have.
It's just inspiring.
Today, we're here to celebrate you.
We are Walt Disney World!
The world's largest structure of canned food!
I love the idea of the Give a Day, Get a Day campaign at Disney, because you can volunteer for a wonderful nonprofit, and you get a free day at a Disney theme park. It doesn't get much better than that.
Volunteer work is for families, and Disney is for families, so it's a great place to put it all together.
Today, Hands On Network marks an exciting milestone in our partnership with Disney. Since January 1st, in just 6 weeks, an astounding 600,000 volunteers have signed up for their day of service.
We didn't do this to come to Disney World.
I think it's really kind of inspired us to do even more.
115,000 cans, which is a Guinness World Record for the largest can structure ever. But really more important than that, this represents food for 70,000 families.
Keep up the good work.
Well, I think bravo to the folks over at Disney for their partnership with the Hands-On Network to draw attention to volunteerism. You know, hey, if they can give away that many trips to Disney World as a thank you, there are a lot of nonprofits and a lot of needy people, I think, that are going to benefit from that kind of effort. Well, that's that wraps up what I've got for you here on page one. We're going to get ready here for page two. Hey, here on page two, we've got our guest expert today, that is Mike Johnson is with us. He is the president and CEO of Hewitt & Johnson Consulting. He's co-founder of the Global Legacy Program, Global Legacy Giving Group, rather, and a senior fundraising partner with a Dutch-based company, Nassau, and a French-based company, Optimus. He's been a fundraiser for 23 years and has worked with hundreds of organizations all over the world. Mike is considered to be an expert in direct mail, certainly was one of the leading experts in online fundraising. When I was looking to put together the ePhilanthropy Foundation, there were very few people who were more helpful than Mike Johnson. He had already written a couple of books very much ahead of his time in the nonprofit sector. On his own, he wrote a couple of books, and then he's gone on and partnered with me with a couple of other books, and he is a contributing author to people-to-people fundraising, that's social networking and Web 2.0 for charities. So we've got Mike Johnson here today, wealth of experience, so don't hesitate to call in and ask a question. That number is 1-347-324-3080. So everybody listening on the web on Blog Talk Radio today, don't miss the opportunity to ask Mike a question. I think if I'm doing things right here, this is only show number two, so I'm learning the switchboard. I think I've got Mike Johnson here with us. Mike, you here?
Yep. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just
Hello,
fine.
Ted.
You're here live on Blog Talk Radio and the Nonprofit Coach. So thank you for joining us. Now, Mike, you travel about as much as I do, and I think you're not sitting in Toronto today, are you? Where are you?
No, I'm in Madrid, sunny Madrid today, with UNICEF, lovely to be here, Ted.
Well, that's terrific. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, I think we will have a couple of callers for you today. But before we get to that, several things I want to get a chance to ask you about. Some that I think you heard part of the page one news, so I want to cover some of that, and I also want to get some insight into your experience in online fundraising and linking to traditional fundraising. But first, sort of controversial topic, what's your take on senators here in the United States beginning to really question million-dollar paychecks for some charity CEOs here in the United States?
I mean, first, whether it's right or wrong, we're seeing increasing attention in multiple countries. So it's not just the U.S., institutions in Canada and institutions here in Europe. The same thing is happening. I think it's in part because of tough times. People want to see what people are being paid, and for the charitable sector, it's, you know, Ted, it's always been sensitive, and I think we can expect more of this. We see it in Canada. There were heads of a few children's hospital foundations where the executive, the CEO of the foundation's pay was front page news on multiple newspapers, and it was difficult with the public. I think, Ted, ultimately there might have to be a shift considering all this public attention in that contracts of foundation CEOs, nonprofit CEOs, may have to be a combination, more of a combination of set salary and then perhaps more performance bonuses, and that could be mission deliverable or fundraising deliverable. I think $1 million gets anyone's attention in any country, and it may be that we need to, in the same way that banking CEOs in the United States and the UK are having to change the way that they're compensated, the same thing may happen with the CEOs of nonprofits.
Mike, is it an issue of skill set? I mean, is it just really impossible to find qualified people unless you're paying at those rates? I know that, you know, for a lot of nonprofit executives, salaries have grown. Some of them are, very respectable, but very few of them that are hitting the stratosphere like this. Are these just really good negotiators with boards of directors that aren't paying attention, or is this necessary to attract good talent?
Yeah, good question. I mean, hard to say, but again, I'd make a parallel to the commercial world. Without a doubt, banks and other commercial institutions, you can see efficiency and inefficiency at play. You can see an old boys network that's at play in the banking system, you know, board of directors who, you know, want to cause ripples and give good salary compensation to their peers. I mean, people they see every day. Some of them could be at play in some situations. It may not be in this case. But I think there has to be constant vigilance in the nonprofit sector on corporate compensation in the same way that banks do too. So I think it's good that we're paying attention. I'm glad senators are bringing this up, because there could be situations where people are being paid too much. Now, I think, Ted, if it does mean that there's more oversight and political pressure and public pressure, and if salaries do come down, even if there are bonuses on top for performance, it could mean that we see a lot less people coming over from the commercial sector with executive management experience for nonprofits. But, you know, I'll give you one example. I mean, a nonprofit organization, tiny one in Toronto, it's now being run by a corporate giant, someone who was well compensated running steel companies and other large multinational mining company, but believes in giving back and is paid a pittance of what he was paid when he was running corporations. So I'm not sure lower compensation would stop sort of emeritus and older executives from coming over, because they would have got their great compensation from the commercial world. So.
But again, I'm just wondering out loud, is there just a lack of talent that we need to bring people over from the for-profit sector, or if they come over from the nonprofit sector, we're just supposed to feel sorry for them because we don't make as much in the nonprofit sector?
Yeah, no, it's a, I mean, you know that, Ted, that a lot of large organizations like the one that you were mentioning earlier, these are hundreds of millions of dollars. These are large corporations, and they demand excellent compensation to run multi-hundred-million-dollar corporations. They've always been lower compensated. Even if you're making $1 million to run an organization worth hundreds of millions, that's still much below what an executive would be paid for an equivalent-sized commercial entity. So there's always a downward pressure. I think it's right or wrong, a public prejudice that puts pressure on nonprofits to keep salaries lower for executive positions that would probably be paid much, much higher and might deserve a higher compensation to run a $500 million nonprofit, but politically difficult to do it. I think it's just becoming politically difficult to do so.
Right. Well, Mike, I know you're tight on time here today, so I do have several other things, and we've got a caller or two for you as well. Another thing I wanted to, from page one, just have you reflect on. I'm sure you've already made note of the survey posted on Chronicle Philanthropy from Nicole Wallace, but I know you've got quite a bit of experience with marketing and for-profit partnerships in the nonprofit sector, this survey seems to bear out that kind of work, that the public views these things very positively. Can you reflect on that, and is this a growing trend? Is this something that a broader range of charities should be considering than maybe consider it right now?
Yeah. I think one of the great difficulties in the past of building cost-affordable corporate nonprofit relationships, whether that's affinity marketing or workplace giving or CSR cause related product connection between companies and nonprofits is affordability for the nonprofit. And so Ted, you would agree, there are a lot of technology and online tools that are now available to allow nonprofits to provide value-added connection back to their corporate partners, either in corporate co-branded online workplace campaigns or online marketing that's now affordable for the nonprofits but can be co-branded to the nonprofit to the corporate partners. So I think it's just early days for sort of small, medium-sized, and even a lot of large-sized nonprofits to look for technology solutions that allow for more corporate cause-related connection, CSR cause-related connection back and forth.
But
does that make sense, Ted?
I think this survey is interesting. It was commissioned by Cohn, which is a Boston marketing firm.
Yep.
I think probably because that's what they're involved with, and they want to see it positive here. Great to see that the public views it positively, but are they profitable
yep.
for charity or only profitable for the for-profit?
Well, to give you an example, in a down economy, corporations within their vertical or who they're competing against, for banks, for example, banks are now in Europe, Santander and others here in Spain, the banks are competing against each other. They want to have some competitive advantage over another bank with the prospective customer. And they read a report like this and say, gosh, as a company, we've got to do more with nonprofits we support, in part to be able to market there to and think that they can get customers over someone else. So that report is, the report itself is not having influence, but that perspective is sinking into companies that are hyper-competitive, and that could be supermarkets as well. So places where there are many equivalent players in a commercial market, they see partnering up with nonprofits more and more as a way to win over a customer, over a competitor.
Is this a for-profit trying to leverage the goodwill of a nonprofit? Is it in fact profitable to charities? I mean, that's one of the things. I can see where the benefit is for the for-profit
yep.
company,
but questions
for the nonprofit sector?
Yeah, great. Good question, Ted. There has to be a partnership where real money is flowing to the nonprofit. So you're right that, yeah, clearly I think there's nothing wrong for a commercial entity to have self-interest involved here where they see a commercial competitive advantage by partnering with a nonprofit. The nonprofit needs to make sure that it makes itself stronger in that arrangement. So that's either income flowing from affinity programs with goals set and meet those goals, or employee giving matched by a company and real money flowing to the nonprofit. So there has to be a give and take. Nonprofits are benefiting hopefully financially and perhaps brand building, but commercial entities are, yeah, absolutely. They're taking advantage, if you want to say, but I'd say more getting the benefit, right, of mission delivered cause related connection.
Thank you, Mike. Listen, you more than a lot of other folks saw the promise of the internet very early on in the nonprofit sector. I wanted to explore with you how did you do that? I mean, you were already exploring and writing in this sector before I ever came up with the idea of the E. Philanthropy Foundation, before I even wrote my first book. How did you see that before anyone else saw that, and what was it like back then?
Some of it's happened chance, some of it's friends, right, who pay attention, and some of it's focusing on opportunity. So George Irish, a great old colleague and friend, was an early adopter of the internet, understood the direct response fundraising I was doing in multiple channels, and and began to inform me, you know, 15, 16 years ago about the possibilities. And really together we started to look at, first and foremost, where there were direct response opportunities. Well, where we could sort of parallel asking people to do things, either taking action or giving money, could be replicated online. And that's as complicated as it gets, that we saw an early channel opportunity. I saw parallels in direct response fundraising. I still think they're there. And so we moved started to create a liturgy online because there were 50 books I could take off a shelf about direct mail fundraising and have a predictability, and there was a liturgy that was there to support me and the nonprofits in direct mail. I thought it was time to start to test and build some liturgy and some understanding and predictability with online. And so we started early doing that.
So what's happening now? I mean, we're now, really 10, for you maybe 12 years, but for a serious approach, you and I started the ePhilanthropy Foundation 10 years ago, which doesn't sound like it's that long ago, but in internet years, that is eons ago. So how have we grown as a sector? What do you think are the most important lessons for nonprofits right now in the use of the internet?
I see good things and bad things. Bad things in that the tools are more powerful to have better donor relationships, to better integrate cross-channel marketing. There are many commercial players who have fantastic tools out there, and some open source and sort of free solutions to do amazing things online, both advocacy and fundraising. But I think people are not, they're sort of abandoning some of their principles and good fundraising theory about taking care of a donor, making them feel safe, getting them to kind of get deeper into an organization and move up, the donor pyramid. We're seeing people not doing that enough. We see people just moving from the next shiny thing to the next shiny thing. And good and bad, there are so many shiny things, Ted, so many tools, so many solutions. And I think people are losing focus on what's really important, which is kind of the human peer-to-peer or person-to-person relationships, good customer service. People aren't investing in customer service. They're instead, buying the next shiny thing. That worries me. I haven't seen people focusing enough on good customer service. And connected to customer service is cross-channel. So I'll give you a good example today, Ted, and to the listeners. A higher education institution wants to run an online fundraising campaign. We have settled on a model that will first get people to give to a campaign and connect to it online through a set of business rules. They will then perhaps get a call triggered, and within certain city catchment areas, some people will get a visit to get a major gift. So a large financial goal, it's physically represented online. There will be money raised online, but there will be a sort of customer service donor cultivation sequence that involves other channels to get closer to a supporter. So we see online for a lot of organizations keeping people from a closer relationship with a donor. And I think online is staggeringly good at organizing and categorizing and gathering information on donors, but you then have to have a set of business rules to get you closer and closer and closer to less and less of those people. But we see that missing. And so I would just say, even over the last 14 years, we don't see those channels being connected for what we just say is a better donor experience. And it could be moving people to larger gifts. We just see people moving to the next fancy thing. And now there's all of this froth about text and mobile giving. And our greatest successes with using the mobile TED are getting people to take action online, and in some jurisdictions where we can negotiate it, then calling those people and having a voice on the phone and converting them to a more commit to a committed gift. That I would urge people listening to ask people, wireless carriers and others, to look more deeply into the impact of a $5 gift, and if that stops subsequent relationships, again, that's a bright, shiny thing that we should be cautious about, and we should think about how mobile phones connect to also leaving a legacy gift in a few decades, and how do we take the longer term view?
We started planning the People to People Fundraising book probably about 4 years ago, and it's probably never been more timely. And Mike, I want to thank you. You've got a chapter coming up in the new book that's going to come out next month called Internet Management for Nonprofits. And I think that the combination of those two books, looking at what is real about social networking, and I think that the caution that you're giving is really to focus on those relationships. And I agree with you on mobile. I think mobile is exciting. I think it's certainly something that charities should consider, but they've got to get the basics down first. You can't jump from having a really awful website that's badly designed to somehow having a successful mobile campaign.
I just love to say, Ted, you were talking about the UN having a social media envoy group, correct?
Yes.
So, you know, for me, I step back as someone who absolutely believes in online and say, do they have a legacy giving envoy group? Good Lord. You could have 10,000 older donors give $100 million, probably, in legacy gifts for UN-related agencies. Well, 100 million people could give $10,000. And that's not to say they shouldn't have a social media envoy, but I think they've skipped over, right? They've skipped over a number of other sort of foundational things that you need to do with fundraising, too. And they go hand in hand. So we know, for example, Ted, that, you know, some of the most visited parts of sites with older donors are the planned giving areas of the site, that people are going to learn about leaving a legacy and be inspired. So online and traditional fundraising go hand in hand. I just want us not to move so darn quickly sometimes with the brightest young starlet walking down the street.
Yeah, I agree. I really think that it is a step-by-step, and it is really important the charities take that time. I think most of my lectures really help debunk that idea of sort of the quick money, because I think that a lot of charities still want to equate email as if it were nothing more than electronic direct mail, and they just want to know, where's that list? Where do I buy that list? How can I just send out enough emails so that money will be coming in? So
that's right. How can I make the same amount of money and spend a hundredth less to get that money? It doesn't work that way.
Do you mind if I ask you a personal question?
Well, Hal is here, and he's wondering if we can ask a question here, and I think that means we've got a caller. So let me see if I can get this right. Caller, are you there with us, caller?
Yep. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, absolutely. You're on live here on the Nonprofit Coach with our Page 2 guest expert, Mike Johnston. Where are you calling from?
From New York, right outside of New York City.
Oh, terrific. And you've got a question for our expert today.
I do. I actually wanted to go back to the cause-related marketing discussion and understand from the corporate perspective, has cause-related marketing generated enough interest that the rest of the marketing budget is kind of reorganized, or are we still talking about money that more or less would have been associated with nonprofit partners and just better ways to approach it? So has it been effective enough to change the direction from other marketing activities and move them towards cause-related marketing?
So I think if you look at very competitive commercial markets like wireless carriers, you'll see organization, a company like Orange, which is a UK wireless carrier in continental Europe as well, fighting people like Vodafone and in the past British Telecom. Some of the wireless carriers, all of their marketing money, right, a lot of their main marketing dollars, not philanthropic, go into cause-related marketing, right, and CSR activities. So for some corporations, they see no distinction, and a vast majority of their marketing budget is now starting to go into CSR-related. And I can maybe send Ted a few examples of that. So in hyper-competitive retail environments, some corporations are making all the marketing money they're spending connected to CSR. That's not to say in other markets you see a distinction, but we do see a movement in hyper-competitive markets to spend just flat-out old marketing dollars on CSR-related activities.
Mike, are there specific messages or ways that the charities should be approaching for this kind of marketing dollar?
It's a good question. It always depends on the market. I think to stand in the shoes of the corporation, I think if you can see it from their perspective, meaning, you know, the CSR corporate cause related projects that you're offering and showing how it improves their ability to gain market share while still generating revenue for you. I mean, that's the way everyone seems to be talking to us. Does that make sense? It's about getting more customers, making their brand more competitive against other like-minded corporations, going after the same customer. So we're getting more and more of that perspective every day.
Great. Well, thank you very much, caller, for that very thoughtful call. And I know that we're starting to run a little long here, Mike, and you're all the way over in Madrid. So we're going to let you go and say thank you very much for your time here on page two. Thanks, Mike.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff. Pleasure.
Well, coming back here from the break, I do have a real treat for me. On the line here is Neil Galliford. Neil is working hard with me and my team here, and I have to say I'm so impressed with his efforts. We're going to be working together on bringing a Digital Leap Conference to Toronto on April 23rd. That's my birthday, so I'm going to be up there in Toronto with the good folks. And I think, Neil, you're with us here, aren't you, Neil?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, terrific, terrific. So, Neil, thanks for jumping on here. I know you've got a tight schedule, but can you give us a rundown on all the great work that's coming together and how things are looking for what's shaping up to be just a really great conference there in Toronto?
Well, yeah, I'd love to do that. First of all, I have to say it must be Canada Day on your radio program. I was listening to Mike Johnson, who's a colleague of mine up here, and it sounded like a really...
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. He's in Madrid right now.
Yeah, lucky guy. Anyway, yeah, no, we're really looking forward to seeing you up here at the Digital Leap Conference on April 23rd. We got a great, schedule set out, a great program set out. You know Andrew Masawi from Blackbaud. He's going to be there and speaking. We have a social media guru here in Toronto named Scott Stratton, who goes under the handle of Unmarketing. He's got more than 50,000 followers on Twitter, and he set out to master that medium. He's really great to listen to. And we've got Google Canada speaking and telling us how some of the best things in life are free, the free offerings that Google itself has for not-for-profit organizations.
Registration is already growing strong. How can folks register for Digital Leap Canada on April 23rd?
That's no problem at all. You just go to digitalleap.org. digitalleap.org, and you'll find all the information you need to know about the conference, the program, and you can register right there online.
Terrific. I know we've got some great sponsors that have come on board, and that certainly is a vote of confidence to the kind of conference that this is going to be. Who are some of the sponsors that we've got for this conference?
Well, Blackbaud itself is a conference sponsor, the premium level. We have a local organization called GMG Solutions, which is a support services firm. They're in as a platinum sponsor. We have a couple of service providers in the digital space, Cornerstone Group of Companies, and Unix Vision.
Where's this? This is going to be held at a really spectacular location, and the folks over there are working hard as well. Why don't you give us a little bit of a preview of where this is going to be?
This event's going to be held at the Royal Conservatory of Music, which is a newly renovated space where they've taken the old stone and brick building and wrapped a modern building around half of it, creating a amazing recital hall called Kerner Hall, and it's just a gorgeous, gorgeous space. I mean, it's worth the price of entry just to come and experience the space.
Well, that's great. Well, I can't thank you, Neil, enough for coming on board and letting our listeners hear a little bit more about the planning for Digital Leap. I'm looking forward to it. It's, I guess if I'm looking right, it's about a little bit more than 5 weeks away. So register early, and we'll see you all in Toronto. Thanks again for joining us today, Neil.
Hey, no problem. Glad to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
All right. You take care. All right. We And over here on page four are some topics from the P2P fundraising.org newsletter. And I think one of the really exciting things to share for our friends in Australia and Canada is that YouTube has now extended the nonprofit program to include Australia and Canada, already covering the USA and the UK. So urging all of our listeners to check that out at youtube.com/nonprofits. Also, just a reminder that we've got the ARTES Interaction Conference coming to Washington, D.C. That's going to be, at a really terrific location not to be missed, at the museum on March 30th. I'm going to lecturing at the LSA Conference in Sacramento on April 26th through the 28th, and you can find more information about that at LutheranServices.org. We mentioned a little bit earlier several deadlines that are coming up, and another one that I want to draw your attention to are the YouTube Awards, the annual Do-Gooder Nonprofit Video Awards. That deadline is coming up actually this week. March 19th is your deadline there, so don't miss that opportunity, and that's youtube.com/nonprofit. Video awards, and of course all of this is available online at p2pfundraising.org. Click on the archives and you'll see not only the entire newsletter, but just click on radio links and you'll get all the links that we have in today's show. Wow, we've had quite a day here together. Thanks again to Mike Johnson for joining us as our page two expert. Just to recap, we took a look at a terrific new survey over at Chronicle of Philanthropy, Charity and Marketing Partnership Survey. We also explored whether or not now is the time to pre-order the iPad, and my estimation is no, save your nonprofit dollars for now. But I do think that the iPad has got some legs here, and it's going to be interesting to see as we get competition in the space and also get on to the third generation of the iPad, just what they're going to pack in there, what the pricing is really going to look at long term. So I think some real solid value coming up there. Kudos again to President Obama in giving away all of his Nobel Peace Prize money, and some really fine charities getting a piece of that pie. I think it's, I agree with Mike Johnson. It's good that senators here in the United States are taking a look at very high charity salaries. I think it's wise to know what the value is. But I also, you know, caution one of the big problems that I have in terms of how nonprofits are viewed in the United States is, you know, somehow we get squeamish when we talk about administrative costs as if somehow by magic really well-run charities don't cost anything. They do, and if we want good management, we want good accounting, then we do have to pay for it. But it has to be reasonable. And what is reasonable, I think, is open for public debate. But I think we drive down salaries, we drive down quality, then we get the kind of scandals that we've seen in the past, where you've got people who either don't have the management skills or don't have the ethical fortitude to be able to know right from wrong. And certainly we have to hold our charities to a higher standard. I think that comes in the form of appropriate salaries, but also comes in the form of a higher ethical standard. Very important to us is the nonprofit social or the Social Innovation Awards. There's a philanthropy category there. Deadlines coming up. We also took a look, and Mike Johnson noted this as well, the UN Social Media Envoys. I really praise them for trying to harness and use the massive power of social networking to get the word out, particularly, again, taking a look at the YouTube volunteer piece that we heard from Jeremy Piven very early on in the show. Again, taking a look at this issue of really stewardship and telling the story of how money that is given is put to good work. I think that's extremely, extremely important. We're seeing that, I think, done very well here with the UN Social Media Envoys, and that so much progress in malaria has been made, and we have that final measure with this universal campaign. But I also agree with Mike Johnson that there are other forms that utilizing the power and the messaging of this kind of medium really could, on the heels of this UN Social Media Envoy, maybe could grow in some other ways. So really fine show today. Mike Johnson, bang-up job. Really can't thank you enough. A true leader in our sector, a friend for years, and someone who will continue to provide strong leadership to our sector. Just want to drive your attention and invite you to please join us for our next show. We will be back here on March 23rd, 12 noon, Lunch with Ted, the nonprofit coach. Don't miss the opportunity to join us. Either join us online and just listen in at blogtalkradio.com/nonprofit coach, or go ahead and get your best question and really put our page two experts to the test and call in to 1-347-324-3080. And with that, I want to thank everybody for a really fine show today. Thanks, everybody.